the Issue Is Podcast Extra. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, we take a bit of a break from politics, at least for this podcast, to bring you a super fascinating conversation with somebody that I love, somebody that's meant a lot to my life, Dr. Arthur C. Bartner, who is the director of the USC Trojan Marching Band. He is celebrating his 50th year as director. 50 years. And what a journey it has been. He's taken the band from what he said was basically a mess to international prominence. They've played the Oscars, the Super Bowl, the Grammys, the Olympics. Their band is in Forrest Gump. They're with Fleetwood Mac. They have multiple platinum albums, performed with Diana Ross. I mean, they perform with everybody. And so we sat down with Dr. Bartner for a piece that aired on the Fox 11 News, my other job in addition to The Issue Is. But the conversation I thought was so cool and interesting that it's worth people hearing it in full. And I know there's a lot of band geeks out there. I played tenor sax myself back in the day that would really appreciate some of these stories and getting Dr. Bartner a chance to talk about them. So here is our conversation. This was not planned to be a podcast, so you might hear some stuff that sounds like a sort of a news interview. But here is our conversation.
Dr. Arthur C. Bartner. The director of the greatest band in the history of the universe, right? The USC Trojan Marching
That's
Band.
That's correct, yeah.
Thank you so much for being with us, and congratulations on 50 years.
Well, thank you.
What does 50 years mean to you? What does that number mean?
It means I've been here a long time, is what it means. But it's been a fabulous journey. It's gone by like that. And I don't know where... The time's gone so fast.
What do you think is the key to your success and longevity?
Well, I think number one, it's the students. The students keep you young. You know, they're vibrant. They're smart. They have this energy, this spirit about them, and you can't help but get involved with them, and it keeps you young, and it makes the time go fast.
Mm-hmm. And do you have, and this, I'm going to go into a longer interview in a second, but this is so that they can use something today. Is there one standout moment or one standout memory?
Absolutely. Fleetwood Mac,
yeah,
and recording of Tusk is probably number one. Number two was the 1984 Olympics. Mm-hmm. Which included around 150 Trojans. It was an 800-piece band from all over the United States. And those are my two right. top memories.
And Fleetwood Mac, of course, went platinum, right?
Yes.
And not once but twice, because then you did the dance in 1997 when they came back and you performed it live
yes.
with them. And that also went platinum, right?
Right, it went quadruple platinum.
Quadruple platinum. So you got four platinum CDs over there,
yes.
or records. Okay, let's go back to the beginning. So you grow up in Michigan, right?
No, I grew up in New Jersey.
New Jersey, okay. Yeah, you do not have a Michigan accent. I don't know where.
No, I'm Maplewood, New Jersey.
Okay.
It's a suburb of New York City.
And you grew up playing trumpet?
I did. I played trumpet all through college and afterwards, and I came out to California in 1970 and looked around the room, and there was a lot of great trumpet players in this city, so I really concentrated on USC and education.
How'd you first get the gig here?
I received the gig because, number one, nobody locally wanted the gig. The band was in disrepair, if you will, and nobody in this area was interested in the gig. So I marched with a gentleman by the name of Bob Wojak, who was receiving his doctorate at USC. So when they opened it up and said, well, who do you know outside of Southern California? He recommended me back at Michigan. And that was my connection. I was asked to apply.
And you were the band director in Michigan?
Yes, I was a high school band director at Davison High School outside of Flint while I was working on my doctorate at the University of Michigan.
So then you get here, the band's in disrepair. I mean, I'm envisioning like Sister Act, like you show up and like the nobody can sing and then you turn it around. I mean, how does that start? When you walk in there and you see that, what do you do first?
You look for help, is what you're and the help came from Marv Goo, who was an assistant football coach working with the defensive line. And he and I bonded, and he took me to football practice, and he said, this is what this band needs to be. Mm-hmm. And he created an identity for the band. And which exists today, that the correlation with our football team is absolutely unprecedented in this country.
How would you describe the identity of the band?
Well, we have a lot of different identities, but I would say number one is that we're a football band in the true sense of the word, that everything we do revolves around the football team. Every play they run, we have a response, whether it's the drums or it's a tune or it's a cheer, everything we do. We play for them several times during our rehearsal. They're just right across the street. Mm-hmm. So we play Tribute to Troy for them all the time. The Friday before a home game, we have a rally with just the team and the band. And so we have all this correlation, and it's created an identity for this band program.
But you also, you wear the sunglasses, right? I mean, there's like a cool identity, too.
Yes. Well, then there's the Hollywood identity. And that also occurred early on in the 70s with Henry Mancini, who came out to conduct with Diana Ross, who sang with us in a Rose Bowl, the Academy Awards. So as the years have gone by, I mean, we look like a band out of Ben-Hur or something like that. So we've just bought into this Trojan motif.
Right. When do you feel like, at what point in your career that it's clicking? Because at first you go from disrepair. When do you feel like, we got it, I got it?
Yeah, that's a great question. The first inkling that I was going to be able to turn this program around was the Rose Bowl of 1973. And this is when Diana Ross sang with the band. She was up for an Academy Award for playing Billie Holiday in Lady Sings the Blues. And she appeared with the band, and it was just a knockout performance. It was like, up to that point, nobody paid attention to this band. And all of a sudden, through Diana Ross, oh, this band must be pretty good.
Wow.
So that was the first inkling that, yes, we're going in the right direction.
Hmm. And what'd she say?
What did she say?
What did she sing, and then what did she say? Like, what did she say to you afterwards? How does that go?
Well,
how did she find you guys, and how did that?
Well, I met a, and this is, sounds like a Hollywood story, but I met a gentleman by the name of Hank Ehrlich, who was the director of public relations at Paramount Studios. Now, he was looking to promote this movie, to promote Diana Ross. I'm looking for a star to perform at the Rose Bowl. And he called, and we met. We went to this restaurant called Scandia on Sunset. And it's just all history. It just worked out great. And she did not win the Academy Award.
I know, yeah.
But our football team beat Ohio State in the halftime show was wonderful.
Wow, what a thing. I mean, because she was probably the biggest star in the world then, right?
Yes, she, you know, and I knew her from the Supremes, you know, and so I knew her background, and here she crossed over into movies, and she was just a huge star then.
So that happens in 73. Is the next big moment for the band Tusk?
Yes, yes.
And that's in what
in 1979. And that occurred where Mick Fleetwood himself called the band office. And he said on his next album, he wanted that big band sound. They had been touring in Germany and, you know, got used to the German bands, mm-hmm. and said, my next album, I want that band sound.
Why did he pick you?
That's a good question. I'm not sure why. The only thing that I can think, we had, through the 70s, built up a Hollywood reputation. We were on a Dinah Shore show. We were on the Mitzi Gaynor show. We started to appear on various Hollywood events. Mm-hmm. And maybe that...
I saw you somewhere, maybe.
Yes.
So you... so then that's at Dodger Stadium, right?
Yes.
The recording. Walk us through that day.
The day... Well, first of all, if I can go back...
Sure.
Myself and my arranger, Tony Fox, we went out to their studio in Santa Monica, and Mick was there, Lindsey Buckingham was there, and Lindsey played this tune for us. And what's interesting is they don't read music.
Really?
No. So he plays his tune, he sings it, sounds great. There's a huge drum solo that's in the middle of it, that's at a time, and nobody knows how many counts it is because it's different every time. So we sat down with them, we talked them through, and we wrote our arrangement to fit the song.
So you wrote something, but they didn't have anything written.
Right. Yeah. We wrote something because the band...
You got 100 right. people or whatever, yeah.
And then, so the second step was they made a track of Here's Tusk. And now we go into Dodger Stadium. They set up the mics. They put me on a ladder. I have Mick by my side. And we record the band part over their track.
So you're you have your headphones.
Yes.
You're listening to Lindsey and Stevie and all of them, and you're going.
Right. I've got the earphones on. I'm listening and
And they're coming off of Rumors, right? Which was one of the biggest albums in the history of albums.
Yes.
And this is the follow-up.
Right.
Right. And it's you leading the way on the title track.
And I don't know. I mean, I obviously know Fleetwood Mac, but I have no idea how big this is going to come. It's just a great gig. It's great experience for my students. We get them. March in, and they make an MTV video, and it's just this excitement. They get to hobnob with all the members of Fleetwood Mac. I mean, it's just fabulous. But I don't really know how big this is going to become.
So how big does it become?
Well, I'm driving to school in the fall. We recorded this in June, the beginning of the summer. So I'm driving to school one day, and I hear, here's the latest recording by Fleetwood Mac featuring the USC Trojan Marching Band. So I'm going, I'm practically driving off the road, and I'm going, and they go, Tusk.
Da, 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 da.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's how I found out that this was... A pre-release from their new album, and then just went up the charts.
And was it number one?
I don't know if it went to number one, but it definitely was top 10, and I think maybe got as high as 4.
So you guys like to say you're the only marching band with the platinum album, right?
Oh yes, I brag all the time.
So then, post-Tusk, which becomes then your signature song after every win, right? Because that's your thing.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. how does that change the band? How does that change your reputation? How does that change what happens to you guys?
Yes, it becomes, because the band's reputation had really been local.
Yeah.
Hollywood, the city of LA, it's USC, it's been local. But Tusk, we became a national, almost international,
yeah.
If you include, you know, Australia
and
Britain. And so all of a sudden you can demand more from these kids. Mm-hmm. You can say, well, you know, you're just not representing Trojan football. You're now representing USC to the world. Mm. And you can really, and I did, I just put more demands on them.
Would you describe yourself as a disciplinarian?
Yes, that's very kindly of you. I am a screamer and a shouter. Mm. I'm a perfectionist. Mm-hmm. I'm a Virgo, and I still at this young age, I'm still the same as I was when I was 30, and I demand perfection.
And is that hard for some kids to take, especially at the beginning?
I think so. They have to. Yes, the beauty of it, the kids understand that it's not a personal thing.
Right.
It's just that I want this level of excellence. And if, for example, if I see somebody move at the end of a number, I will call them out.
Yeah.
Now, maybe I'm old school when it comes to that approach, but it's really out of love for this program.
Right. So, okay, so Tusk happens. 5 years later, the Olympic Games are in your home stadium.
Yes.
And you're tasked to be a part of that.
Yes. I can remember that like it was yesterday. The phone call from David Wolper. Mm. And he asked me if I would like to direct the Olympic All-American College Band for the opening of the Olympics. Wow. Mm. So I, you know, came aboard and I put this 800-piece band together, representing all 50 states. And we also had band students from UCLA and the bands in Southern California. And we had 150 Trojans. And we moved into Pepperdine, spent 17 days preparing the show.
And is that sort of unlike anything you've ever done before? I mean, just the feel of that. I mean, talk about international.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I had, before that, I did the opening of Epcot.
Mm.
And this was kind of like the blueprint,
right,
for this All-American College Band. Because the opening of Epcot was very similar. It was 90 schools, four kids from every school, and so it came to about 360 or so bandsmen. And that became the blueprint for this Olympic band.
But I mean, just like the vibe in the Coliseum. I mean, what did that feel like?
You know, you can't, it's like, you can't explain it unless you experience it.
Yeah.
But it's there's not an empty seat in the crowd. You know, everybody is focused. It's to me, it's the best band show ever. And I'll tell you why. That ABC, excuse me.
ABC.
Was it ABC?
Yeah.
They covered it, and they covered it like a Broadway show. Mm-hmm. They had mics here, they had mics there, they had mics. I mean, they covered it where they knew every formation. And if they took a break, it was when there wasn't any action on the field. Mm-hmm. We started in the stands and came down. So they took the break at the appropriate part. And it was like 90% coverage and perfect picked up for the sound of the band.
And then you create an American America,
yes,
standing on the field.
Yes, and the climax was we took the whole cast and we squeezed the whole cast inside the outline of the United States, mm-hmm, of America. And every member of that crowd, 100,000 plus, had an American flag. Mm. And it was just, it was goosebumps. It was, yeah, electric.
Yeah, goosebumps just thinking about it. Can only imagine what it was like being there. So that's a big moment. Talk about some of the presidents, because I know Ronald Reagan was there, right, watching that performance,
yes,
that day.
Yes.
Which presidents have you performed for or performed with?
Well, President Obama, you know, spoke on this steps of Doheny.
I was before he was president, right? Pardon? That was before he was president, right? He was a senator in 2006.
Yes.
I was a student here then.
Yes,
I remember that.
Yes.
Yes, 2006, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. And we spoke for President Bush Sr. Gerald Ford, I remember very well because, you know, he was a University of Michigan football player.
Right.
So I remember that. President Reagan really was, we played for him more than any president. We played him off to Washington. We played him when he returned. We played for his second inauguration, mm, in Washington, D.C. When he returned, we presented him with a Trojan Band helmet, which is still in the Reagan Library.
Yeah.
So we had this very strong relationship with him.
And then let's talk about some of the celebrities over the years, too.
Well, I don't know where to start on that, but there's just so many. But we've had appearing with the band.
Right.
That we've had Jason Derulo, which, mm-hmm, is a heartthrob for every student.
Right.
He got the biggest cheer,
really,
ever by this band.
I remember that performance. Yeah.
We've had, you know, great singers. We've had Louis Belson, Maynard Ferguson, Quincy Jones conducted this band. I mean,
Will Ferrell conducted the band, right?
Yes. Well,
sort of.
Sort of. Will Ferrell, at an event in Bovard, was one of the few that I allowed, maybe the only one, to put on the drum major armor and hold the sword.
Mm-hmm.
And I made him promise not to make it a comical character.
Right.
And my drum major gave him lessons, and the band came out, and then he revealed himself after the band, and the crowd just went crazy, and every social media picked him up, and
right,
and he did. He took it very seriously.
Well, he has a lot of respect for you. Yeah.
Well, I think he has respect for the university, the football,
right,
team, and he was great. He was a drum major until the very end. In the very end, as he was marching off, he started twirling the sword a little bit.
Which, right, is a no-no for perfectionists.
Which is a no-no, yeah. but it was at the end, so
yeah,
it was okay.
Let's talk about some of the other landmark performances. 1997, right? Fleetwood Mac gets back,
yes,
together, and it's in Pasadena, right?
Yes, it's actually at Universal Studios.
Oh, okay, and it's called The Dance, and then the big,
yes,
finale is you guys. Walk, right, us through that story.
This is a little different than the original, because now you have, they're recording this album of their, you know, famous hits,
right,
at Universal Studio on a soundstage, so they built an audience,
hmm,
and the band, the band came in not at the beginning, but on the drum break.
Mm-hmm.
So they play the first half of the tune, sing it, and on the drum break, the band came in and surrounded the group, and Mick wanted the drummers right in front of him, and we played it out, and it was just the surprise element that nobody knew that we were going to be there.
Are those the only two times you've played it with them?
No. Well
Lindsay played it
as a group
in the state. Yeah.
No, we've played with Lindsay by himself.
Yeah.
We've played with Mick by himself. Mm. But as a group, those are the only two times.
Are they going to do anything during your 50th year?
I have already invited. We're having a big celebration on May 2nd, 2020. And I've already invited Mick, and I hope to invite Lindsay.
Yeah, they're fighting now, though.
I know.
Yeah,
so
which is not good. So that's a big moment. Outkast at the Grammys.
Yes. Outkast, that was pretty fabulous.
Yes, it
and
was.
And they had the top one and two hits in the country.
Yeah.
And, we joined them for
this
those.
Hey Ya and I Like the Way You Move, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And, but we were, for that number, we were kind of background. Mm. We were background. The big hit was, I think, 7, 8 years later with Radiohead.
Yes.
Because what was unique is they had Tom York, the lead singer, and then the bass player, Johnny Greenwood. And then we were the other 3/5 of the group. I mean, nobody thought this would ever work, including the two stars, because what do they know of college bands? But we had, I think, we had a big drum line, and then we had a brass line, and so we would rehearse and then send them a tape over to England. Hmm. And they would listen to it and say, oh, I think it's going to work. And then they came to the United States, and then we rehearsed with them for 2 weeks. And it was a home run.
Yeah. So you weren't on the original record. You just did the Grammy.
No, we were just on the Grammys with them.
And that was a time, if I remember correctly, you weren't in its traditional uniforms, right? You're in black with the little cardinal and gold drumsticks to show
right.
that you're USC.
You're right.
Yeah.
A lot of these Hollywood gigs, you're not necessarily the USC band.
Yeah.
For Glee, we were the whatever high school band that is. For Forrest Gump, we were the Alabama band.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, we're the Alabama band, and Tom Hanks runs right through the band. I think they snuck a victory sign up there, but they shouldn't have done that. So a lot of times, right, we're not in our uniforms, we're in whatever the event calls for. Now, Dancing with the Stars, we were the USC band.
Wow, God, there's so much. So 50th year now, what are we going to see special? We have this big performance coming up in May. Other things we're going to, that's special for this year?
There's two huge events. The May 2nd is the official retirement, and we're going to try to tell the story of 50 years in about an hour and a half.
Wow.
With some guest artists, a lot of videos, tell the story. The band will be involved, the alumni will be involved, some football stars will be involved. So that's one big event. And then homecoming of 2020. My goal is to bring back every bandsman who's ever marched in this program.
Wow.
And we've already started that. We've created a TMBAA, a Trojan Marching Band Alumni Association, and we're already getting the word out, and we just hope to fill the Coliseum with former bandsmen.
So that's after you retire, technically.
Yes.
You'd come back for one last special performance with everybody.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
That'd be a lot to direct, huh? How many kids is that? Do you have any idea of how many students you've had over the years?
Yes. It's over 4,000.
Mm.
Now, we're trying to, you know, it's like a class reunion, if you will. So we're trying to round everybody up, get an email address, get a phone number.
Right.
And this is an ongoing project.
How many of those people still play music?
Well, that's the scary part.
For a perfectionist, right?
Yeah, I don't. Well, we will send them the music in advance.
Okay.
And, you know, we'll have an official 50 t-shirt, and so that they all look the same. And you know, we'll tell them to start, dust off that horn.
Right.
And start preparing.
Why the decision to retire?
That's a good question. I've a couple of reasons. Number one, I wanted to retire on my own terms. Mm-hmm. I still wanted to be healthy. I wanted to train a predecessor. I wanted the transition to be smooth. Number two, I wanted to set this band up with endowments for scholarships, travel, uniforms, instruments, so that after I retire, this band would be set for now and forevermore. So I've created this Trojan Band Initiative, and we've been raising money ever since.
So who's going to be your successor?
That's a good question. The university is going to set up a search committee. Mm-hmm. And it's going to go national-wide, and I know for a fact at least two members of my staff are going to apply. Mm-hmm. And I'm not invited to be on the search committee.
Why?
Well, I think they want it to be fair to everybody in the country. And so I think that's just a policy.
Right.
So even though I have somebody in mind, it has to be fair to everybody.
Maybe you can send an email when they set up the account.
Okay, yes.
That's what they're doing for Lynn Swann. They set up an email account where you can send your suggestions. They might read yours. Yeah.
Okay.
What do you see as your legacy with this band?
My legacy is really these students. And this is the other thing that's exciting about this homecoming of 2020, that I get to bring all these students back and you know, get to interact and talk to them. And it's, and even the process has started. So I've seen kids, they're not kids anymore. I still call them kids, but I've seen students from the 70s, mm-hmm. who have already retired. They retired before me, and now they're lawyers, they're doctors, school teachers. They've all really done very well for themselves. A lot of them have married and have married other band students and have children who've actually gone on to march in this program.
Right.
And this, to me, is my legacy, to be, see the success. And maybe I've played a little bit of role in their future success.
Yeah, because your first class have got to be, what, 68, 69 years old, something like that?
1970, the fall of 1970.
No, I know, but now, I mean, if they're how old were they then? 18, 19, 20 years old then? And then 50 years later, that's 70 years old.
Yeah.
So, you know, and how old are you?
I am 79.
You're 79.
See, that's another reason why I want to stay around for that homecoming year,
yeah,
so that I can be 80 years old and still giving a downbeat.
Wow.
Which I even though the longevity of right. symphony orchestra conductors is pretty good.
So what do you have you thought about what you're going to do after you retire?
Yes. I'm going to paint.
Really?
I've always wanted to paint. Hmm. And I've obviously never had the time. And I already have my art studio, which is maybe a half a mile from my home. And I'm going to go take classes and learn how to paint.
Wow. Great. My mom's an artist. Professional painter. Yeah.
Well, good. Well, maybe.
Maybe she can help you out. She's
Absolutely.
A big fan of you. I could talk to you all day, but what's anything else you want to add? Anything else we didn't touch on?
Well, it's just been a wonderful career, and I am, you know, I thank the University of Southern California for the opportunity, for the support, and for the freedom to let me build this program.
Right.
They said to me way back in 1970, we've got this eyesore of a band compared to the great Big Ten bands that they played in the Rose Bowl all the time. We want you to develop this band. We want you to create a band that we can be proud of. And that's what this band has become. And also, this band has become what I feel is the soundtrack of USC. Mm-hmm. Almost every event on this campus, from graduation to convocation to groundbreaking to ribbon cuttings, the band is always present. You'll always get Fight On to open. You'll always get Conquest as a closer. Mm-hmm. It's very unique in this country that this band is ubiquitous on this campus.
It is, but to that point, do you ever get sick of the songs? Like you know, UCLA likes to mock the band
by saying
this is the only song we know, making that point about that we hear the same songs over and over again. Do you ever get sick of them?
Never. And this is the honest truth. And because I'll tell you why, it comes from here. And it has touched not just football players and athletes, but alumni. This band, a portion of this band goes out and plays birthdays, anniversaries, you name it.
Right.
They do 300 plus gigs a year for alumni. And I don't get tired of it because I know it touches people. I know when we play Conquest and those fingers go up in the air and little old ladies from Pasadena sing woo, 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 along with the student body,
right.
I know I've touched other people's lives.
Well, you've touched mine. It is the soundtrack of my time here. As I told you, when I was deciding to come here for the first time, I remember that band was playing. It was the first thing I heard when I got on campus. It was the sound I heard when I decided to come to this school. It's been a very full circle experience for me with here, and that's why I'm so excited to do this, because it means a lot to me personally. So thank you for the time, and
thank you for doing this. Thank you so much.
And I guess the last thing I should say is fight on.
Fight on!
Yeah, nicely done.
Our thanks to Dr. Arthur C. Bartner. Our thanks to you for listening. This is a little different than our usual show, which is mostly about politics, but the issue is can be a lot of different things. That's why I love this title. And the issue is a great leader in Southern California history. What a privilege it was talking to him. And we encourage you to get out there and to enjoy watching Dr. Bartner while he's still doing his thing for the rest of this season. I'm Alex Michelson. Thanks for listening. And for our USC people listening, fight on.